It's time for Mac Break Weekly. The Office for the iPad is here. Office for the iPad is here. What will Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco, and Alex Lindsay say about that? We'll also talk about the new iPhone rumors. Bigger? Is it better? We'll find out next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 396, recorded April 1st, 2014, live from the International Friendship Satellite. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak. This is actually very exciting. We have launched the Twit International Friendship Satellite, and now Twit can be seen in places without the internet, all around the world, or places where the internet is blocked. And I think our video engineer Alex Gumpel is prepared to. Are you going to flip the switch?
Well, we actually have a live shot of the satellite.
Let's see it. Wow, that's exciting. It looks like Sandra Bullock is out there fixing it.
Got a plasma cannon on the front.
What do I do?
Now, in space.
So, whenever you're ready, we can go ahead.
International Friendship Satellite.
Well, your producer is getting irked with you.
Now let's flip the switch.
Are we ready to use the satellite?
Let us begin our broadcast day, coming to you live from the Twit Friendship International Friendship Satellite. You can launch it.
Flip the switch. Here we go. There.
Look at that picture. Okay. That's coming to you from space, my friends. All right, let's.
Now all of our broadcast day will be coming to you from
so
the satellite.
Excited. Look at that quality, huh?
I love it.
Even you can't do that. Take that, internets. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly, coming to you live from space. This is really a red letter.
It's going to space. It's going to space.
We want to say hello to all our friends in North Korea. In Turkey,
look at this.
In Russia, it was really the launch of the International Friendship Satellite is such a really significant, I think, advance for us here at.
I think the lower thirds have really improved as well.
You like those?
You know, yeah.
We had a little issue with the TriCaster lower thirds. We can't really use, so we have to have our own
right.
A character generator.
Little Chiron there, and
yeah, Chiron.
Circa 1982.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
There's Andy. It's got the wrong URL for his. It's all right. We can't fix it now because the guy who actually set those lower thirds up is dead.
It's okay. It's a pun now.
But that's him up there hanging in space, fixing the satellite. Wow. Renee Ritchie from Montreal. Good to have you from imore.com.
Thank you, Leo.
Mm-hmm.
Renee, are you opening a store? It looks like you're opening a store.
Renee's got some serious Lego action. And you have did you put the Arkham Asylum?
It's right over here. I don't know if you can see it. I need to get better lighting for it, but it's right behind me.
This looks like an episode of Ham Nation. Hey, we got a special Ham Nation tonight, by the way. Joe Walsh is going to be on the show tomorrow night with from the Eagles. And he's a ham. I didn't know this. And he did the Ham Nation theme song. So I'm hoping we'll put that episode of Ham Nation on the International Friendship Satellite as well. I think that's fairly important. Why did you go? I'm a little concerned because
Video engineer Alex Gumpel went running across the studio. Is there something I should... He's just checking things. The flux capacitor seems to be on the fritz right now. Do we have a shot of the signal processor that we're sending this stuff through? You would like this. Did you see this?
I haven't seen this before until today. I didn't realize we had this all...
Oh, we're entering the 20th century now. This is not a joke. And actually, if you look at the wiring, it spells something.
That is awesome.
Geek TV. Yeah. So with that, with the signal is going through that coiled wire. They've run a 60 hertz process power cord across it. What else can you do? The fan. The fan's good. It generates a little bit of.
Oh my gosh. This is awesome. There's a serious case of why didn't I think of that? And I sit there and spend a lot of time doing effects in After Effects and other things, and I could have just made a coil of wires and shake them.
So good. So good. Thank you, Alex, for... I charged him. I said, what would this show look like in 1968?
For transcripts of the Phil Donahue Show, send a self-addressed envelope to Mac Break Weekly, 396 Episode Boulevard.
even Alex looks the part. Thank you, Alex Gumpel. That's rock.
Great.
And happy April Fool's Day, everybody. I'm not good at April Fool's jokes because I get bit. I believe these things. And it's very hard to go around the internet this time of year and try to figure out, is this true? Is this not true? It's particularly a problem in the Mac news industry since so much stuff is rumor and bizarre anyway.
It's my mother's favorite holiday. Oh, my gosh.
Is she the kind of person who puts, like, salt in the sugar bowl so that when you get up for breakfast and you have your
Wheaties?
That was
one of her many mornings.
Does she short-sheet the beds?
Her favorite one was waking us, changing all of our clocks to 2 hours earlier for school.
Oh, and, that's so mean.
And then rushing us around and then us finding out that we're
you get there two hours
early. I mean, she would My dad actually wrecked his car on April 1 many years ago, and he called and she wouldn't believe him. he's like, I need you to send someone. I'm hanging upside down. And she just laughed at him.
No, we can go clean now.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to irritate.
What cigarette company is sponsoring us today, Leo?
Territin.
Well, then we got
what was the one where people had black eyes from
I'd rather fight than switch.
I'd rather fight than switch. Was that Territin? All right. Let's
okay, here we go.
No.
I know, it's sad.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Burke, close your helmet, Burke.
You know, if you're wondering how he eats and breathes and other science facts, just repeat to yourself, it's just a show. I should really just relax. Mac Break Weekly, 496.
Is that live?
Yeah, it's live. We didn't record this.
Space, the final frontier.
That's a real can with a real beat on the front of it.
That's a beat?
I don't know.
Brought to you by Emerson TV, the clearest, sharpest 12-inch picture in America.
RCA.
Hey, Burke, are you there, Burke?
Making things with which to kill people that aren't us.
Yeah, you have to zoom in and then see him, like, hanging.
Petaluma, we have a problem.
I wonder if they'll figure out what my little joke is for today.
Oh, that's what I hate about April Fool's.
Oh, I can't keep it in. It's supposed to be Sir Galahad, but it's actually Sir Gawain because...
Oh!
Gawain wasn't taking the empty table at the round table. I the show. I'm sorry.
He's such a jokester.
I couldn't sit on that one, Leo. I knew I'd blow it. Because everyone's probably like, oh, my God, that looks like the round table, but that doesn't look like...
That's what I was thinking.
I'm sorry.
He's such a wag. Alex Lindsay's also here from the Pixel Corps. Nice to see you.
Good to be here.
And all the way to the right, Mr. Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Arkham Asylum over your left shoulder there.
Right
there. I hope they don't take over the entire asylum.
This is good. He really does look like he's opening a store, though, doesn't he? I see you have an Apple TV. I'd like to buy that.
The original one, running Tiger, if you want to go back to the Stone Ages.
Wow.
It's the Renee Home Shopping Network.
Everything must go.
Did you hack that to run Tiger, or did it run Tiger?
No, it shipped with a version of OS X Tiger was the original operating
system.
You're
kidding. I didn't know that. Or I guess I knew it and I forgot it. When did the Apple TV come out?
2007. It was 2006 it was shown off, and then 2007 it shared the stage with the original iPhone demo at Macworld.
Wow. Hey, speaking of Macworld, a lot of people in studio who were here, I presume you were here for Macworld Expo. Did you have fun? Was it a good week in San Francisco? Yeah. Anybody here go to Macworld? Renee Ritchie. Thank you. The guy who came the farthest. How was Macworld Expo this year?
It was great. There were a lot of MacBreak Weekly fans, a lot of Twit fans. They all came up. They all extended you their best wishes. And it was a fun show. I mean, it's a fan event now because, like we discussed last week, there's no Apple and there's CES and other shows. But this is the only place you can go and actually yell at the people who make your apps and your accessories. And a lot of people had a lot of fun doing that.
That's neat. Yeah, it's a good time. Y'all glad you came? You're coming back next year? Oh, that was not a resounding yes, but we'll work on them. We'll work. Anyway, we're glad you made the trip up to the Brick House because we're a little bit about an hour north of San Francisco, and you had to stick around a little extra. We had a little rain. I think we're going to have thunderstorms later today. So in the week, this week, something happened on Thursday that was a pretty big deal. Microsoft released Office for the iPad. And I actually think it's not bad, but I'd love to hear what you guys think. I doubt Alex Lindsay played with it at all.
I don't use Office anymore.
That's the problem. It's a little late.
Well, I'm not willing to commit from a company perspective. I wasn't willing to commit the amount of money that I have to spend on Office when I could just have Pages and Numbers. And
well, Office,
we have Excel for the heavy lifting. So we do still use that. So the really, really heavy lifting, but I haven't liked Word since, you know, like 5.1.
I think Macintosh users have always had a difficult relationship with Word because it came out first on the Mac, right?
Right.
But it was always a little bit odd. The memory management was Microsoft's brand memory management. It was a little strange. It didn't operate quite like a Mac program, and yet it was Mac. You know, it was one of the first Mac power tools and sold very well. In fact, I know that Microsoft considered Word or Office, I should say, on the Mac to be one of their cash cows.
Well, and I think that Word's fine. I think that really my complaints are really Excel and especially PowerPoint are just, you know, rustic. You know, when it comes to like design, I mean, I think Excel
Pages
does,
is prettier. Although the new Pages to
really
me
like
looks,
Pages
doesn't look very good compared to even to Word.
I have to admit, it's not so much. I think Pages looks fine. I think the problem is it's just really heavy. You always feel like you're like moving through molasses, and so we tend to use Google Docs for a lot of that stuff. But when it comes to like if you're organizing something, you want a spreadsheet. You know, there's nothing like Numbers. Not if you want to run giant sheets of financials, but if you just want to organize stuff that you would use Excel for, Numbers just leaves it in the dust. And nothing's,
if you want
nothing's
pivot
as good
tables
as
tables and Lisa does deep financial analysis,
That's
front
Excel.
Office stuff, you can use Excel.
No, that's Excel. But I think that if you're looking at 90% of the people who use Excel do not do that.
Right.
You know, they're organizing stuff. They just need a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And Numbers is just so much faster. And then in addition to that, Keynote, I mean, we work in the presentation world, and nobody who is serious about presentations uses, I mean, lots of little business people use PowerPoint, but no one who's serious about presentations use anything but Keynote if they're going to use a presentation tool. You know, I mean, it's so much more. So you look at this, it's fine. I mean, you got to have, there's definitely a lot of people that are going to use it. Just not me.
Andy, you, for a while anyway, were writing and doing everything on an iPad, right?
Yeah. And it's still pretty much my primary outside of the office computer. And I got to say that I really prefer Word to Pages, at least in the week that I've been using it, only because I'm not sure if I'd say the same thing about the iOS 6 version of Pages, because my complaint about Pages now is that I think that with the iOS 7 makeover, they went so hard with the bleach and the scouring pad that I often can't really orient myself on the features that I'm using right now and where I am in the page and stuff like that. I mean, it's not confusing, but I kind of like the reassuring more, you know, the louder voice of the interface in Word. Also, there is, as someone who's written a bunch of books, knowing how important it is to round trip a chapter of a Word document with notes, edit tracks, all that sort of stuff, and make sure those are intact. That's another big win for Word. I think that it's hard to think about how it's going to compete in a world in which the iWork apps are free. But when you think of it as a free app for people who are already subscribed to Office 365, and therefore people who are already invested in those tools, boy, is that a big win. They work great. They're very, very native. They're easy to use. In the case of Word, where they deleted features, they didn't really trim it down. They just simply removed the stuff that almost nobody would even consider using on a tablet. And if anything, it makes an iPad mini that much more impressive and that much more useful than even was a couple months ago, because putting this on an iPad mini is now, gee, why am I traveling with a notebook? Why am I even traveling with a larger sized iPad? Because, again, I have not been using an iPad mini for iWork stuff, because, again, when you make that really, really minimalistic interface and scrunch it down, for me, it's a hard place to live for 4 or 5 or 6 hours to do like a whole day's worth of work on when I'm traveling. But Office on the iPad, easy, comfortable, and the screen isn't necessarily that much smaller than I need it to be. So
I have to say, I do pay for Office because I use it on a variety of platforms. Mm-hmm. And it's a fairly good deal. I pay $99 a year. Somebody just said you can get it for as little as $67 for a year on Amazon. And I have to say, when I looked at the last version of Office and I had to go to a store and buy a box for like $400, that was a real stopper. It was hard for me to justify that. But to say, hey, you're going to pay $8 a month,
And not only that, Microsoft is saying every time we enhance the Office world, you get that for free. You don't have to buy the iPad product. You're not going to have to buy the Windows Phone product. It's just going to come out for free.
Well, and that was the deal. So for that price, I got 5 installed desktop versions, and that means I have 1 on Windows, but I also have 2 on Macintosh, even though it's Office 2011. They do promise they'll update it when the new Office comes out. And then now they're saying, and you can have 5 tablet installs. Although, as CNET pointed out, nobody's paying any attention to that. So Microsoft's saying, yeah, we're not really counting your tablet installs.
No, there's Apple.
Which means, right, but it does mean that there's a loophole that means that I could, for instance, give you my, I would never do this, but I could give you my Office 365 login.
Right.
And you could install it on your iPad and play with it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Renee, if you install Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, you can open and view documents, right, without anything.
Yeah, you can open them, you can view them, and you can even present them if you want to show them off to your team or use them around the office. In order to edit them, you need the Office 365 subscription. And I'm okay with that. I have an Adobe Creative Cloud subscription. Yeah. I like that way better than the old model of having to decide every 2 years whether this was the update I get and this was the update I skip.
It's like having a slow leak instead of a blowout.
And you get features faster.
Because none of us are saving all year. You know, it's just
my money's dribbling out of my wallet instead of flying out of my wallet. It ends up being, you know, somewhat the same probably, but.
And they did a much better job with the iPad apps than they did with their dismal iPhone apps. I was really happy. You never know when you're waiting a long time for something and there's a huge pent-up demand. It might be episode 1 or it might be Indiana Jones 4 where you're so excited to get it and then you spend a lot of time with it and you're like, it's not exactly what I wanted. But this is a really great program. The only problem I think they have is they waited so long to get it to market. They seem to want people, especially in business, to not use an iPad because they couldn't get Office on it. And it turned out they stopped using Office if they wanted to use an iPad. And it gave iWork a ton of time to catch up. It gave Google Docs a fair bit amount of time to catch up. So the casual need sort of evaporated. But still, for those people in enterprise who have the subscription, now they can use the iPad with wanton abandon.
Yeah, that is the big deal. People tend to forget that, think of Office as a set of apps when it's actually a platform just as big as Windows, just as big as macOS, just as big as iOS, where people, this is where they live, this is where all their documents are, this is where all their collaborative tools are. And so if your Office is standardized on Microsoft Office, and it's almost a certainty that it is, the ability to simply magically say that this $500 iPad now will essentially be an extension of your entire workspace inside on your Office or on your $2,000 laptop, that's a big win. It would be nice if they came out with this a couple years ago, but if they came out with it a couple years ago and it stank, then I don't think people would be complaining about Microsoft's fall. I think they'll do just fine with it as is right now.
The new CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, introduced it on Thursday, and reporters asked him after the event, why did it take so long? You know, there's two schools of thought for this. One is that under Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates, they were never going to release this for the iPad before they released it for Surface, for their own hardware. They felt that that was a selling point for Surface. If you had to use Office, well, you'd get a Microsoft tablet.
Right.
And then the other school of thought was kind of more like what you just said, Andy. They had to get it right. Nadella said it was the latter. He says, we've obviously been working on this for a while. The thing we wanted to get most right was the combination, and this is very Microsoft, what I'm about to tell you, was the combination of the app, the enterprise architecture, the developer APIs, and then marry it with the device and what you'd expect from the device. It's not just a trivial thing. Let's port Word for Windows to a particular device. I think they succeeded here. It is really a touch-first version of Word. The touch targets are a trifle small, which is always a problem on Windows as well on touch. But it's usable.
It's touch native. And the interesting
thing
to me is
that feels that way, doesn't it?
The interesting thing to me is that I think the Ballmer story has a lot of credit because Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer were very platform first, but their platform was the PC.
Right.
And Nadella is a cloud services guy. His platform is things like SharePoint, things like OneDrive. And while you can store your documents from Office for iPad locally on your iPad, it's much more powerful with SharePoint links and with a OneDrive account. And I think he's sort of giving up that notion that you have to have that PC on every desktop, and he's going in where he wants Microsoft services on every device. And it's a different strategy, but it could be a really good one.
Well, and it could be a nod to the fact that they're giving up on the OS, but I think that really they have a lot of great services that, you know, are not, you know, Microsoft Windows.
There's a perfect example. Azure, which is their cloud service, was Windows Azure. It has been renamed to Microsoft Azure. It might be reading too much into it, but I think there are a lot of little signs that this is a new Microsoft and that Satya is going to take it in that direction of enterprise first, cloud platform first. It's no longer Windows first. And I think that's a very good thing.
That's smart.
It's what they need to do.
I don't know that's necessarily because of the arrival of a new CEO a few months ago.
I think that's why the new CEO's there.
I think it's the reason why they brought up their CEO from cloud services instead of through anything else. I really think that the missing link that stalled this project was Office 365. I think they had a long-range strategy of moving Office and decentralizing it and basically saying it is irrelevant to us what device, where you physically are when you're running this service. We're going to make sure that everything works so closely together that you will want to continue to use this service. Once that strategy crystallized itself, I think that's the only that was the moment of inspiration that allowed the rest of these teams to say, oh, okay, so now we know how we're going to make Office for mobile. And also let's also not overlook that Apple threw a massive grenade into everybody's development schedule last year, last summer when they showed off iOS 7, where we all know so many developers who essentially had to go to the whiteboard calmly with a glass of whiskey in one hand and a dry erase eraser in the other hand and say, okay, we have to totally redesign our app from the ground up because this is so totally different from what we've been developing for the past year that none of what we've been doing makes sense. So I don't know how much earlier they could have released this if not for iOS 7.
No, and we know a lot of app developers had that pain point as well when iOS 7
I believe Microsoft did as well. I mean, I've heard that Microsoft
did.
But the only thing to me that sort of – so I can't see a world where Apple would have put the OS 10 version of iWork on the iPad. And I think it was telling that Microsoft didn't have a touch version of Office ready to go with the Surface. That, you know, it's – mobile has been hard for many companies. It's been really hard for Facebook. It's been really hard for Microsoft. But I think the Office for iPad shows that they're kind of finally getting all their ducks in their own, not just with their own operating system, but with all their software and services as well.
I thought it was interesting, too, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but when Nadella wanted to show it off, he said, give me my iPad. And the only reason I make a big point of that, my iPad, is that, remember, Bill Gates forbade his children to have iPods. He would not let his kids have Apple products in the house. This is a company – I mean, remember Steve Ballmer? Somebody was in the front row with an iPhone. He took it at a company all-hands meeting. He took it from the guy and pretended a stamp on it. This is a company that didn't welcome Apple products. And so for Satya Nadella to say, give me my – I don't think that's a mistake. I don't think that's an accident. I think that's
– he tweeted the iTunes link.
Yeah,
they want to sell the service. They don't care so much about the exactly. about the platform strategy anymore. Also, it makes perfect sense that they were released this for iOS before even their Windows platforms, Windows tablets. Because if you think about it, it's already very, very easy to get Microsoft Office on a $500 tablet that runs a Microsoft operating system, because you can buy a $500 Windows 8 tablet legit. So maybe that wasn't quite so much pressure. But yeah, if they had been able to simply to make an emphatic statement about how important the Windows Metro interface is, that here is how we're going to redesign all of our apps so that they make more sense on mobile, God, that would have been such a welcome shot of credibility for a platform that's now being allowed to grow and sort of take its time. It's a hobby for them right now. They're very proud of it. They're pleased with the sales numbers, but they're going to have a patient attitude. We don't want to release this until it's perfectly right. No.
We had a guy on Sunday at Twit who was in town because he was installing Windows 7 machines in a bank because they had XP, and hundreds of seats of Windows 7. He says he's been doing this all over the country. I said, any Windows 8? He said, nobody even says the word 8. It doesn't come up.
And I think that this is this movement is the first thing I've seen Microsoft do where I think, oh, they're going the right, they might actually be going the right direction. Because I think that Windows, obviously it has a fair amount of historical momentum that's going to keep it going for another decade.
A billion users.
That's what I'm saying. There's historical momentum. But I think that there's got to be someone in the background saying, our days of operating systems are...
No, I think they know that. And over. I think Satya Nadella was specifically brought in.
Right.
In fact, I think even Ballmer said that. He says, I'm not the guy who's going to make the transition to devices and services.
Right.
We need somebody who can make that transition, and that's who they brought in. That really makes perfect sense. My only question is it like Windows Phone? Microsoft, I think Windows Phone is great. It's a beautiful operating system. It's nicely done. It was so late to the party. It's probably dead on arrival just because nobody's going to develop apps for it. I'm wondering if the same problem here with touch-first operating systems, touch-first applications, they're late to the game. I mean, Office for the iPad is so late at this point that I would guess most people have a workaround or a solution, and they're not even going to look at it.
But I think the market that they're playing to is Microsoft's strongest market historically, which is the I don't care market. I've talked about this before. That I think that, and it sounds like, I'm insulting people who use Microsoft products, but they're people who just want something functional. This is a computer and software is a practical, functional piece of equipment that they use to get their work done. And so, if you simply say if they were in the market for any sort of a tablet at this point, and you tell them that, oh, by the way, we now have a product so that you don't necessarily that so that the apps and the data and the SharePoints and the cloud storage that is native to your Office solutions in your office are now working on this tablet fine. Oh, but I was going to use iWork. Yeah, iWork uses iCloud, and you can export it to something else and then maybe email it to yourself and then import it into this other. Or you can just use this Office product that will simply open the file where it is, edit it where it is, save it where it is. So it's not so much being late to the game so much as having something valuable to the people who just want something to work. And I feel the same way about Windows Phone too. It's not even necessary that Microsoft have 20% market share by X date. So long as they have a credible product that a certain amount of people are going to find it easy to use, at least it'll be there so that when they do need an emphatically mobile operating system to do something that no other operating system can do, it's there. And these phones that Nokia is making are definitely serving the score there.
All right. Well, there you go. Office for the iPad. It's free to download, free to use as a reader only. And if you have a friend with an Outlook login or a Microsoft Office 365 login, you can borrow theirs and use it.
Don't share your login. It's not.
Don't share your login.
And you don't mind seeing their MythBusters fan fiction.
Well, that's the problem. And I think that's why Microsoft isn't really too worried about this loophole that CNET's reporting is. If I gave you my login, you'd have all my documents. You'd have access to my OneDrive. And that seems like a pretty
nobody wants that.
Dumb thing to do.
Well, and I think that's a great policy too of having people naturally figure out, how far they want to share.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than having all
they don't
this
have
crazy,
to police this. That's the new Microsoft too, by the way. Bill Gates put three different DRM copy protections on Windows. He was famously paranoid. So
they're
the fact
that my software,
yeah, that's
all the way from Altair Basic. That was this first big splash. Yeah. Writing a letter saying, "Hey, I know that you're copying our Altair Basic on paper tape. We're telling you that we need to get paid for this."
Yeah. So this is also new. Right. That there is a, you know what, you can install it. It's all right. We're not going to do anything about it. That's a very different Microsoft. Incidentally, also a very different Microsoft, and perhaps one of the sticking points, Apple's 30% VIG. Turns out, according to Ina Fried at Recode, Apple does get 30% if you subscribe to Office 365 within the app, which you can do. Apple will get its 30%.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. I mean, it's still no different than Walmart getting 50% of the profits of everything sold in their store. It's Apple's store, but digital goods are different, and sometimes the 30% is all the margin that a service like Netflix or Amazon gets. So, it still needs to be sorted out.
Does it feel like the momentum? I mean, I have to admit that now, I mean, there's definitely high-end graphics apps that I still buy and install and everything else, but if it's something that, unless it can't work without being, you know, inside the sandbox or it's really a big application, I kind of look sideways at almost everything that isn't in the App Store, because it's just when you get a new computer and you want to install everything and you install 100, you know, I have 100 apps that get installed automatically. I don't have to, you know, go through the gauntlet of upgrading. I think that had to be part of their calculation.
Yeah,
and also I think they figured out that very few people are going to be buying their first Office 365 subscription through this iPad app. I think they're mostly going to be getting people who have already bought it, and this is going to be a value add.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a lot of loss. One thing I do like about this strategy, and I know this isn't the Microsoft show, but I'll throw this in, then we'll stop. But with OneNote free now for the Macintosh, with Office 365, with iPad, they're truly cross-platform. I mean, I can open my OneDrive on virtually any mobile or desktop operating system. I can open my Word documents, edit them, round trip it 100%. From Android, from iOS.
Well, I think in some ways that they're now ahead of Apple as far as iWork goes in that area. I mean, most of what we expect that to do, we expect Google Docs to do that. You know, I mean, that's kind of the...
But it does it better than Google Docs. Although, yeah, I mean, today, Google Docs. I had to write something, what did I open up? I opened up a Google Doc document.
I mean, Google Docs is not as good as it is. When you run it on an iPad, you realize how much you get by having a native app with a native user interface.
Right.
Because as good as HTML5 apps get, God, it'll never be that responsive.
Speaking of which, by the way, the app, the first HTML app that most of us used came out this day 10 years ago. Can you think of what that is?
Is it Gmail?
It's Gmail.
Yeah.
10 years old. Harry McCracken with a fabulous article on how Gmail got written. Some kind of behind the scenes stuff on his Time site, techland.time.com. Where did I scroll past it? There it is. The inside story of Gmail's launch 10 years ago today. But what I didn't really think about, but it's really true, is that Paul Buchheit and his team wrote really the first web app that many of us had used. Even, you know, Yahoo Mail and Hotmail at the time were really just web interfaces. They weren't web apps.
Right.
This was an app.
Web 2.0, Ajax.
Yeah.
Save New World.
Ajax was created essentially for Gmail.
Yeah.
So Google
Maps sticks out for me as like the first experience that I ever had with web apps.
Pretty amazing. Gmail was the first. In fact, Harry confesses I think he bought a Gmail invite on eBay because everybody wanted it and you couldn't get it.
Right.
One of the things that he reveals is that when Gmail first launched, it was running on a bunch of Pentium 2s in a closet at Google because Google wouldn't give them the resources. They didn't think, you know, Gmail was a big deal or was going to go anywhere. So it was, you know, just a bunch of Pentium 2s they had lying around. 300 old Pentium 2 computers nobody else at Google wanted. And that's why it was such a limited beta rollout. I remember getting an invite very early on, and I still use Gmail. It still is the default email client for most people. Very much like when Google came out, you could tell if somebody was hip if they when you asked them, what search engine do you use? And they said Alta Vista, you thought, nah. Yeah. But if they said Google, you said, you're with it. Same thing with Gmail. What's your email address? Hotmail.com? Yeah. Google Gmail.com?
One of my editor at the Sun-Times, original editor retired, he told me that by far his favorite line that I'd ever written in any tech piece was when I said that if you have an AOL.com email address, it's like showing up to a job interview with a clip-on bow tie.
That's a very good line. Speaking of nerds, and we're going to take a break, but when we come back, Will Wheaton's beautiful response at Comic-Con in Denver to a little girl, a 12-year-old girl, who asked him, how did you handle being called a nerd as a kid? And it's such a beautiful response. I just want to play it in its entirety since we are all nerds here, are we not?
Yes.
Yes, we are. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. I'll play the video in just a second. Lynda.com is a great place if you are a nerd or a wannabe nerd to learn software, business skills, creative skills for personal or professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, you get unlimited access to over 2,400 courses in every aspect of technology. I almost want to say life, because it's not just technology. How to negotiate a deal that is there, too. How to create a resume. You can see any of the videos. They're high quality. We're not talking YouTube, you know, stuff. These are well-done videos on everything from photography and web design to app development, business strategies. They've got, if you want to record music, and I know Jason Howell, who does this in his free time, has said these are great videos. Logic Pro X, they'll show you how to use it. Logic Pro 10, how to use Final Cut Pro 10 to edit videos, Pages, Keynote, Numbers. And the thing is, there's always new videos. So, they'll be in iOS Office videos any minute now.
I've had Lynda.com, I think, almost from day one.
Every business should, right?
It's $25 a month.
Yeah.
It's it's not, this is just, I have it just so that when I'm trying to figure something out, I can go up there and because what's great about it also is it's not just that you have all this training, because it'll be 9 hours of training in Photoshop. I don't want to watch 9 hours of training, but they break it all up. So what I'll do is I'll look up there and I'll go, oh, I got to figure out this new tool in Photoshop, and I'll find the 5 or 8 minute clip inside of that. Watch it. You know that's going to be well produced. It's going to be well thought out.
Well, it's by our friends. I mean, Chris Breen does some great stuff there. Bert Monroy, our Photoshop guru, has a weekly show that's free, by the way, on Lynda.com. In fact, if you go to Lynda.com/MacBreak, you can see some of the shows Chris and Bert do. All levels, beginner, intermediate, advanced. You can watch on your computer, your tablet, your mobile device. You know, another nice feature is they have written transcripts that you can search for the stuff you want to learn and jump right to that part of the video, which is very, very handy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now they have this kind of nice thing. You get the certificate of completion when you finish a course. You can put it on your LinkedIn profile. It's great for working professionals. And I think people know that, you now know how to use Photoshop, or you know how to edit in Lightroom, that kind of thing. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire library. They have other plans for $37.50 a month. You get the premium plan that includes the exercise files, so you can get all of the layers of a Photoshop project, for instance, and work along with the instructor. Try Lynda.com right now. We're going to give you a free 7-day trial, so a week to access every video on the site for 7 days. Visit lynda.com, lynda.com/MacBreak. Lynda.com. There you'll see. Welcome to fans of MacBreak Weekly. And there's Chris and Bert's courses and stuff. And get that free trial. We love them. Lynda.com. Will Wheaton. I'll just play the girl's question. This is on YouTube. And Will Wheaton's response from the Denver Comic Con.
When you were a kid, were you called a nerd? And if so, how did you deal with it?
When I was a little boy, I was called a nerd all the time. Because I didn't like sports, I loved to read, I liked math and science, I thought school was really cool, and it hurt a lot, because it's never okay when a person makes fun of you for something like you didn't choose. You know, we don't choose to be nerds. We can't help it that we like these things, and we shouldn't apologize for liking these things. I wish that I could tell you that there is a really easy way to just not care. But the truth is, it hurts. But here's the thing that you might be able to understand. As a matter of fact, I'm confident you'll be able to understand this because you asked this question. When a person makes fun of you, when a person is cruel to you, it has nothing to do with you. It's not about what you said. It's not about what you did. It's not about what you love. It's about them feeling bad about themselves. They feel sad. They don't get positive attention from their parents. They don't feel as smart as you. They don't understand the things that you understand. Maybe one of their parents is really pushing them to be a cheerleader or a baseball player or an engineer or something that they just don't want to do. So they take that out on you because they can't go and be mean with a person who's actually hurting you. So when a person is cruel to you like that, I know that this is hard, but honestly, the kind and best reaction is to pity them. And don't let them make you feel bad because you love them. Maybe find out what they love and talk about how they love them. I bet you find out that a person who loves tetherball exactly the same way that you love Dr. Hooper, but you just love different things. And I will tell you this, it absolutely gets better as you get older. And I know it's really hard when you're in school and you're surrounded by the same 400 people a day that pick on you and make you feel bad about yourself. But there's 50,000 people here this weekend who went through the exact same thing, and we're all doing really well.
That's a really nice statement. I should just put that on the wall and frame it so kids growing up can...
I was there, in fact.
Were you there?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
Yep, I was there. I was there to interview and or introduce William Shatner.
What? Wait a minute, Andy. How did that go?
It's a long story. It went great. I have a Shatner story that is highly positive and highly wonderful. Basically, they were flying me out to what was going to be an hour long interview of Stan Lee, and then he dropped out, and they got Shatner instead. And so I had to figure out, okay, I don't know whether Mr. Shatner will want an interview or just me to introduce him and get the hell off the stage. Or anyway. But yeah, it was the first time I'd actually seen Will like in a convention sort of environment, because you know you and I have both met him like at geek cruises and places like that. And yeah, I mean, he said exactly the right thing to a person who needed to hear it at exactly the right time. And there's very little that I could possibly add to that.
Yeah, I mean, so I was really impressed because that's the kind of you're in the situation where. Probably the quick, glib answer would be the first thing I would do and a lot of people would do. And the fact that he sat back and he actually answered it from his heart, I thought was really great. Really great.
Yeah.
And I just also, wanted to...
Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, the best part is the humanist, the value empathy. Of empathy that he talked about.
Yeah.
That, I mean, when I've seen people do these It Gets Better videos, and they're really, a lot of them are not very good because they say, you know, when you're being bullied, think about how 10 years from now, because you're curious and you're smart, that person's going to be dumb and he's not going to have a good job. And you can, you know, think about how much better you're doing. No, that's really not it. It's basically the core message is that, you know, you're unfortunately 10 or 11 years old. You have very little experience in talking to people. And so it's very hard for you to understand where people's thoughts and their hurtful statements come from, and doesn't mean that you necessarily have to say, yes, please abuse me and shout horrible things at me and make me want to throw up every morning before I leave the house to go to school. But at least you understand that, you know, it really does have nothing to do with you. And perhaps in 10 years time, you'll be able to appreciate what they're talking about from a different perspective with new information about how the humans work.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, it's good. That was a great.
Yeah,
video.
It was very. It was actually quite a deep thing he said. I thought it was quite good, and all totally right on. And all of us who are geeks, I like the word geek better than nerd. But all of us who are geeks,
I was both.
You were a geek and a nerd.
I was a geek and a nerd.
But you also
played football.
You also had guns and you played football. So you it was like a different kind of.
But here's the thing:
I doubt you were bullied in school.
No, I was actually the. What Dexter is to
you were the serial killer who took out the bully.
Like I was the bully's bully.
Yeah.
And so if I saw a bully, the only thing I knew is my dad would not be upset if I bullied a bully. So the thing is that I was an angry little kid. I was an angry nerd and everything else. And so if you bullied some other kid, you were fair game.
Yeah.
And I was pretty ruthless.
Wow. So, Alex the Terminator Lindsay. Holy
you know,
cow.
I find that if you take a bully and you pick him up by his neck and you shake him really hard and bang him against the wall, it clarifies his mind. You know?
This is not a guy who feels empathy and pity.
I will understand if you don't want to answer this, but do you have a collection of leather ties in your closet that you don't allow your children to see?
No leather ties. Okay. But I do have
Alex
some thin
Lindsay
ones.
Is Batman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is your yearbook custom bound with a type of hide that the bookbinder was not?
But I'm so much nicer now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you don't want to cross Alex.
No. I'm fine now.
I've heard you yelling through three walls and a couple of doors.
Okay. I'm a little. I can be a little high strung at times. That's all I can say.
So. No, but when you're yelling, and I do. I'm not a shrinking violet either. But when you're angry, it's for good reason. It's not for a random reason. So Apple isn't, I don't know, according to Japanese newspaper reports, which is always a great source for this kind of information, Apple is definitely going to release two screen sizes in September of the iPhone 6. Now, I always use Rene Ritchie as the rumor validator or invalidator, because iMore.com, you guys really get all the scoops. What is the status of this idea?
I have only heard about one large screen iPhone this year. I have no doubt that Apple is working on a variety, or at least testing a variety of sizes, because they really want, they test everything. Anytime you hear someone say, why didn't Apple do this? The most common answer is they spent a year with that in the lab and didn't like it for XYZ reason. So I have no doubt that they are testing a wide variety of sizes, might even be prototyping a wide variety of sizes. But I've still only heard of one regular size and one large size.
Ming-Chi Kuo, who has been very consistent as a source, he's an analyst for KGI Security, says Apple will not go bigger than 5 inches because of their, quote, unwavering, end quote, dedication to the idea of having it be a one-handed phone.
They're also a very good step-by-step company. If you look, they had the same screen size for a while. Then they went Retina. Then they went 16:9. Then, you know, if they go bigger now, they're probably not going to just go bigger all in 1 year. They might introduce a larger size iPhone with a much higher resolution, which will then enable them to do a variety of larger screen devices years down the road. But I don't think they'll do all of it in 1 year.
Yeah. You also have to remember that Samsung can get away with doing like a humongous size Note phone because they basically make every phone there is, and they're one maker of Android phones among many. If Apple decides to make a humongous 6-inch phone, that is going to be 50% of all the iPhone models available worldwide for an entire year. So I don't think they'd do something quite that. I don't want to say ridiculous because I've used larger phones. They're kind of nice, but I don't think they do something that wouldn't appeal to just about everybody. And they are just as concerned about smaller hands, smaller female hands, as big male hands like this one.
I actually kind of buy that because, you know, I've been using the Moto X, which ergonomically, as far as I'm concerned, is perfect sized. Mm-hmm. And you and I have both been playing with this HTC One.
Yep.
It's taller. It's bigger. It's also heavier. And it doesn't. It's you know, I can hold it, obviously.
It's not as convenient.
It doesn't quite feel as good in the hand.
No, it's
yeah. So there is something to be said for that. I mean, I use a Note 3, which is too big for their face, let alone your hand, but
head sized.
I can tell the difference.
I think fundamentally, one of the things I've been really thinking about with Apple is that I think that part of what they, when they're developing stuff, I always feel like they're not developing technology because it's important. I think they're developing technology because they don't think it's not important. It shouldn't be the middle of your life. It shouldn't be, oh, cool, this is really, it's like, how do I get this other stuff out of, you know, how do I have it be easy and I don't have to think about it and I have to, it's all in one hand. And I think that there's a fundamental approach to it of it should be in, technology should be in the background, not in the foreground of what you're doing. And of course, we do put it in the foreground.
There's a couple interesting things, too. One is that the physical size of the iPhone will eventually limit, I mean, the 640 by 1136 will eventually limit the quality of software that can be made for it. And there's people in the third world who can only afford one device, and people in North America or Europe who only want to carry one device. So there is value in a primary computing platform that is a bigger phone. But one of my favorite moments at Macworld was the keynote when Ben Baharin was there, and someone asked, you know, all these big phones are all, you know, selling so well. And he said, no, they really aren't.
Right.
In Asian countries, they're selling really well. In North America, and I think as journalists, we kind of feel this instinctively, but it's nice to have someone put real numbers to it. They're selling dismally well. They're not doing well at all. The iPhone still, I don't know if the same will be true this year, but up until last year, it was outselling not just a big phone, but all big phones.
Even the Galaxy S4, which is a big-ish phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was outsell. People were choosing iOS on a smaller screen over something else on a bigger screen. It's the same thing when people chose an iPhone on AT&T over something else on Verizon. Apple can grow their addressable market by offering two screen sizes like they do with every other device they make. But there's no market pressure in North America to do it. People in North America are still happy with relatively small phones. And things like the Note do really well in Asia, but don't right. do really well here yet. So Apple doesn't want to be ahead of that curve. They're not ahead of the curve company. They are a late adopter company.
I don't know if there's an equivalency, though. You have to also, again, factor in that if you want to buy an iPhone, there's only one company that makes it. If you want to buy a phone that runs iOS, you have to buy an iPhone brand phone. I haven't looked at the distribution of the numbers, but does that factor in all availability of all Android handsets everywhere?
I think that's absolutely valid. And that's why I drew the AT&T and Verizon analogy, is that there will be people for whom they can't or they don't want a small phone. And Apple isn't serving their needs right now. So a bigger phone option will let them be more inclusive of that. And then when people choose, we'll see what the real numbers are. Like how many people actually went to Verizon when the iPhone was available on more carriers. So I think that's absolutely valid.
It is very significant that if you name like the 1, 2, 3 most influential and popular Android phones, Sony Xperia, the Samsung, and the HTC One, all three of those companies, their flagship version is a 4.8-inch or 5-inch phone, but they also make a mini version of it that's more the size of an iPhone.
iPhone is 4 inches. The rumors are the 6 will be 4.7 inches or 5.5 inches. I think you can eliminate 5.5 inches. That's too big.
Yeah,
that's gigantic.
Big. Yeah.
I think 4.7 is, I think that's the size of the Moto X. That's not outrageously big. Are there issues also with resolution? Not merely that they don't have enough resolution, but also that you have too many resolutions? Does that make a problem?
I think it might depend on the pixel density as well, because you could definitely get things that might match some of the other.
Retina, though.
Oh, you'll definitely have at least Retina, but I think that what your question is are you trying to match, you know, what resolution of possibly the iPads that you're trying to match and so on and so forth, or, you know, to get something that's...
So you could go down from the iPad.
You could have something that's slightly bigger that's denser, even denser than the iPad and still have it be the, you know, roughly the same. The problem is that the aspect ratio is, of course, different. So that's one of the challenges.
If they wanted to, they could take an iPhone as it is right now, move it to 5 inches, and it would have the exact same pixel density as the iPad Air. So that would keep them.
Okay.
The iPad Mini and the iPhone right now have the same pixel density. The iPad Air is lower. It's 246 instead of 326.
Same pixel density, but not the same resolution.
No, they have more pixels, but when you're cutting screens, it's just nice to be able to cut screen. It's efficient to be able to cut screens from the same density.
The icons will be the same aspect ratio, and
They'll just be bigger. But the problem is that's below 300 pixels, and you hold phones closer. My hope also, I mean, that still isn't more pixels, and I really want more pixels at this point. And if they went to something like 1080p, it would go up to 400 DPI or something like that. But it would give them a lot more future proofing if they ever did want to play with the size more. And yes, that does cause pain to developers, but Apple did that to them with Retina, did that to them with 16:9, and I don't think they would be afraid to do that again.
Yeah, historically, developers, Apple is not afraid to give developers right in the neck if they think there's a benefit to consumers. They feel as though they have apps. They almost feel as though, well, geez, developers, you're lucky that we're allowing you to play in this really, really nice, valuable market space and making our product more valuable so you can create the next generation of amazing applications. So just cancel your let your wife and your kids or your husband and your kids go to Disney World without you for 2 weeks, because I think you're going to figure out how to make this display work in a round configuration.
I just wanted to look up sales numbers to get some sense of whether Behrman was right or not. I don't want him to go unchallenged on this. So in the numbers we have for 2013, 120 million, and this is in the U.S., 120 million smartphones sold. Apple, 45%. And it is the biggest share. Samsung, 26%. Now, some Samsung phones are smaller than the iPhone, but almost all are bigger, some much bigger. LG, bigger, 8%. HTC, 6%.
I mean, when you look at the top ones.
In total, 4% for Motorola. In total, Apple 45%, everybody else
44%. If you look at 2013, you add those all up, of the next four combined, that is
44%.
They're less than
roughly equal.
Right.
But it's not dwarfing the bigger phone sales.
Right.
But it's when it's just Apple against everybody else, it gives you an idea that the pressure isn't as high as some. Cause some people kept saying Apple has to do.
Yeah. I mean, they still have the plurality, the lion's share of the market by a long.
The interesting thing to me is whether they can keep the case smaller, because if the phone gets bigger without the case, if the display gets bigger without the case getting bigger, that's a huge win. The trouble with that now is they have the home button, which takes up a lot of space. And some phone company like Samsung has made a small rectangular home button instead to save more space on the bottom. But Apple's got Touch ID bundled in now. So it's not easy to do that kind of thing. So it's one of those things where decisions they make in the past now influence where they can go in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know if Apple, if I go so far as to say Apple has to do anything. But at this point, if in September they don't release a large screen phone, I think they're making a very, very clear statement about where their priorities are. I think that now, like 4.7, 4.8 is actually a normal sized phone now. And then we talk about big phones. Now we have to talk about the Note 3. Now we have to talk about that big Nokia Lumia 1070 or something. The Pop Tart sized phone. I think this is something that's going to catch up with them if they don't really get on this, because there's so many people who, and I don't get this either, who really live their lives through their phones now, where I can't tell you how many times I've spoken to somebody who said that I'm still limping along on a really, really old laptop because I just don't use my laptop nearly as much as I did a couple of years ago, because I can do all my banking on my phone. I do all my Facebooking on my phone. Everything I really need a computer for at least 80% of it is now done through my phone. And these are the sort of people who will really appreciate having a larger screen to deal with, so long as it doesn't become stupid or ungainly.
And I have to admit, I mean, I would like to see a marginally larger phone. I mean, my issue is that, again, like just like what you were saying, is I do 90% of what I do on my phone, you know, and it, you know, it does feel a little small at times. So I think it would
come on. You're really thinking about taking up on that HTC One, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to
see you carrying it around.
There is a big incentive to do it. I mean, Apple went.
I did it long ago, so don't feel bad. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Apple has 0% market share in under $400 phones, and they have no interest in it. But they have a huge market share in over $400 phones, and that went from, I think, 65% to 85% share. But there's not much growth left there, and what growth there is would probably require a bigger screen, because that's where the premium Android handsets are selling. So if Apple wants to increase their share of the premium market and sort of put a little bit of pain to companies like Samsung, who's owning that market successfully now, then going big makes a lot of sense. It's the only low-hanging growth that they have left in phones.
Well, that's a good point. Well, that's the rumor, and I think we've pretty much debunked it. There are April Fool's stories, which I will ignore. Things like Apple buying iFixit, that's not true. We mentioned last week that iFixit went belly up, basically. Would be nice if Apple bought iFixit. But, you know, Apple, remember, is the company that deletes negative forum posts from its support forum. I don't think they're going to have anything to do with iFixit. So,
if you click the back button on the bottom of that.
We'll call that an April Fool's joke, won't
that
we?
No, it is. If you look in the doc, I put a little thing. And there, now there's a story from Rumors that... it has a whole bunch of different stories, but if you scroll down, it's kind of funny what iFixit did here.
Scroll down on that one. Okay.
Yeah, scroll down on that one.
Says, because if you go to iFixit.com, working together, it's finally here. We're thrilled to announce we're joining forces with Apple starting this summer. Apple, the only tool you'll need.
Yeah.
Why fix it yourself when you can upgrade? Yeah, that's no. The most replaceable devices yet. Apple's now making devices last long enough for repair to become irrelevant. So instead, iFixit has published a list of Apple's most replaceable devices.
Yeah, I feel like April Fool's jokes have really—they don't get how to do these things.
Yeah.
Where now the point is to try to trick people into believing something that isn't true, as opposed to putting something silly and ridiculous out there that, when you look back and you realize this was all a prank, oh, I can't believe I fell for that. Now, you look at some of these things like, no, this is a professionally done site. There's no sarcasm, no humor or anything in this. This is just a straightforward news announcement.
And then there's the April Fool's joke that is basically just an ad for the products involved. Have you seen – you were involved with Virgin America, weren't you?
Long ago. Yeah, we did the original letbafly.com
campaign to get them. Here's Richard Branson.
But I really do believe that Virgin America has reinvented every aspect of flying. Every day, the airline is looking for new ways to give travelers much more control over their experience whilst they're in the air. And today, I'm excited to help announce our newest breakthrough, a partnership with the wonderful company Nest that allows guests to control their own personal climates at 35,000 feet.
At Nest, we focus on creating simple...
So basically, this is an ad for Nest and Virgin America. But I got to admit, they put a little... You know what? We'll skip ahead.
A new interface called Total Temperature Control.
They put...
that each seat should be able to have a certain temperature control.
I'm really excited, Richard. I couldn't believe that we can get together and do such a great partnership between Nest and Virgin.
Tony Fadell and Richard Branson.
Let's say you'd like to feel like you're sitting in a tropical paradise while flying to Newark. Well, simply select... Cancun afternoon. Or if you run a little hot, like me, and desire a cooler ride, well, that's no problem. Just select Chicago Polar Vortex.
Total Temperature Control, a partnership between Virgin America and Nest.
So this is a new trend, I think, in April Fool's jokes that I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, it really is just an ad, right? It's a good ad for the two products, but there's humor in it too. Yeah. So I'm not sure. I don't know if I dislike it. I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing.
I think the best April Fool's ever was the. Remember the Sports Illustrated one about the pitcher who wore one foot was in a boot. And he like meditated and didn't own anything.
Yes,
and
that was a classic.
And you just read through the whole thing. I mean, you were just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And then. And you couldn't believe you were so stupid.
How about the book iMac cover? I think that'd be good. I'd buy that. They have them for the iPad and the iPhone. They're quite nice, but I don't know if I really need one for my iMac.
I still remember the time I wrote an April Fool's article for the Boston Peer Society User Group magazine that explained that the Apple was recalling at the time of the Mac SE, they were recalling the original 128K Macs because, long story, but there were gasoline soaked rags and that they left inside each and every one of them that would ignite by the electron gun firing backwards and trying to erase all the names of people who've been fired from Apple since the first one had been made. But and even then, there were hundreds of people who believed it and were calling Apple about recall instructions. And it's hard to. I think you have to go ridiculous now.
I wouldn't mind this. This is called the Selfie Bot. It's a camera-equipped drone that hovers around you.
Plenty of sunshine through today with seasonal.
Capturing the best selfie moments. People would buy this. I swear to God.
Is that a selfie or an auto reuse? Everybody sells it.
Selfie bot. What's nice about this parody is they get everybody in their classic selfie pose. The pose you've all seen 100 times. Oh, Lord. The guy doing the heart symbol. Yeah. A cat. A selfie. With a cat. What a novel thought. All right, enough of the selfie bot. You know what we didn't see is a ton of Google. Every year, Google does a ton of those, right?
They did this year.
Well, that last one was from Google.
I think they shot their whole wad on the Hoff.
The Hoff really did. Google Chrome
show title.
They shot the bot on the Hoff. Google Chrome for iOS. This is actually kind of nice. Emoji translation. I actually thought this was real. Chrome for mobile.
The way we communicate is changing. It's getting faster, and we're optimizing for the smaller screen. And the written word just can't keep up.
Can a word smile? Can it roll its eyes or say, sorry, not sorry? People use emoji because it provides context.
If somebody were able to just explicitly say, hey, I'm flirting with you, or hey, I'm mocking you, that would just make my life a lot more efficient.
And that's exactly what
that's why you're on the Chrome team. We're excited to announce Google Translate support for emoji. With the click of a button, our translation algorithm interprets the context and tone of words and distills them down into clear, articulate, meaningful symbols. Fancy gentleman. Cut a rug. Shy snowman.
When we Actually, I want this.
We need to understand how people are
It turns using. Every message into
so
a rebus.
For emoji on Chrome for mobile. We looked at lots of users and how they express different things using emoji.
I would buy, I totally if somebody doesn't do this, they're missing the boat.
Which is the same same part of our brain that processes facial recognition. So basically, emoji is a language that everyone already knows.
This is the next phase of linguistic evolution, and we want to provide this to all of our users.
Our expert team is constantly evolving the language.
We're already teaching our kids not to learn how to write longhand. Now we can basically teach them not how to type either by just clicking on icons.
Yeah.
Stickers.
The Chrome team is really excited about being able to translate the entire internet into emoji.
I know, I want that chair.
Emojified. E-commerce. Emojified. Medical journals. Emojified. Emojified. Subtitles. Emojified.
Okay, this is a pretty good one. Programming in emojis. Source equals google.jpg.
These little symbols we call letters. Here at Google, we're giving them 80% back to the user.
Emojify the internet. Available today on Android, iPhone, and iPad. I want that.
You know, this is probably how the Chinese written language started. They were like, you know, we can just use pictures, and then they started using pictures, and then they somehow ended back in text. And they're like,
look at this keyboard.
You're fired. Not an April Fool's joke, and I wanted to get your opinion because it comes from our very own news director Mike Elgin, writing in Cult of Mac this week. Apple needs a social network. When Google announces something new, they can send people to Google Plus to talk about it. When Facebook announces something new, there's a place its users can talk about it. Apple has to send people to Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus. Apple should buy, says Mike, Yahoo. Yahoo's market cap is $37 billion. Chicken feed for Apple. Apple might get Marissa Meyer. We talked about this on Sunday, and everybody said there's no way Marissa would stick around. But what if this would be the crazy talk. Put Tim Cook back in operations. Very good at that. Let Marissa become CEO of Apple.
She can redesign the icon.
She could redesign. Anyway, Yahoo bought Tumblr so that they would have a social network, right?
Yeah, I think that I can definitely see that the pluses of doing that. But I think that culturally, the reason Apple doesn't buy big companies is because there's just a culture clash, and they don't want to. You know, they like to bring people in small bits so they can be assimilated properly.
Right.
Also, when was the last time they bought something that had such a legacy of user interface that they didn't grow themselves? So how long would it take for them to totally refit all Yahoo services so that it looked like it was designed by an Apple's house style?
Oh, yeah. So we're going to reject this out of hand, right? It's an interesting idea.
I don't know. He makes an interesting comment that Apple doesn't have an outlet for this sort of social conversation. He also makes a point that I've been sort of thinking about, if not worrying about, that there's going to be a time when selling hardware at premium prices is no longer going to work out for them. And so they should have some ideas for what they're going to be doing in 5 or 10 years. If they don't have plans to simply create new classes of hardware over and over and over again. But I just don't see them I don't see them wanting to create a platform by which people can simply publish anything they want to the entire world. I see them creating a platform that lets them take things that they're feeling and thinking and looking at and creating and sharing it with people they directly know.
Apparently, this is not a joke.
It's not. So
if you have the latest Chrome,
the emoji thing that you wanted so bad,
yeah,
go to any website.
Yeah, I have. I'm on a Chrome right now. Oh, I don't want to sign in. Where should I go? I should go.
Just go to your account, right? / Leo Laporte.
Yeah, I'll just go to Google Plus. I think I'd be signed in.
go to CNN. Go to CNN.
What about Twit? Let's go to
Twit. Twit doesn't have a lot.
Twit doesn't have a lot of text. We need someone with a lot of text.
Go to Celestial Waste of Bandwidth.
CWOB. It's going to take me to Inotco.com, but that's all right. We can go through all of that here. Where is it? There it is. Now I click that. Yeah. Now I'm on Inotco.com, right?
Cool. So
no, wait a minute. Where is it? Where do I go, Andy?
This isn't just type.
Go to imore.com.
Essentially, there we go. Inotco.com. All right. Now let's see. There's
okay,
here's
so you're
text.
On this page, right?
Yeah.
So go ahead and get swipe down a little bit so you can get a hamburger menu.
Okay.
And then translate to emoji.
Translate to emoji.
And then
in a few seconds.
It translates everything to emoji.
It works! OMG!
Hey, take your photo.
What the mojo? Oh, Andy can write an emoji. There was a time when the people in Germany, credit cards, of roads and bridges were
in charge.
Oh, I get it. This is great. Okay. I hope they leave that in.
You got to shoot some screenshots.
Translate to emoji. Okay, you want a screenshot of that?
Well played, yeah, Google.
Well played. I don't know how to do screenshots on the one.
Down yet either. Volume and I don't know.
And home?
No. I think down volume and lock.
No. I'll get it. That's okay.
He'll do it. I haven't learned that yet. Here's something that was not, I think this is sweet, not an April Fool's joke. Comes from the Buster Dog Boy YouTube account. This was taken a few years ago of our good friend, Mr. Steve Wozniak, making a special delivery a few years ago. Janet and Steve, Janet's his wife, came to our house to play a prank on our kid Emma. This is the warm up. Here they come. Woz came to hand off a new Mac. In a lot of ways, it was like, holy cow, this is long. Thomas Edison delivering you light bulbs. Here we go. Finally, the video. This is typical of Woz. I can just see Woz do this.
What? I don't want you to hurt yourself. Is it okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Right. I'll just be carrying it from the car anyway.
We'll get a little pre-footage here.
Yeah, today, Steve.
Woz actually gave on the screensavers when we had Kevin Mitnick come on the screensavers after his probation had expired and he was able to use the internet for the first time. Woz came on and gave him a MacBook and said, here, this is yours, Kevin, get on the internet for the first time. So Woz has a history of doing this kind of thing. I'm not sure. Let's skip ahead. He's got the box with the Mac in it. He's coming up the stoop. I should have queued this up. I'm sorry. Before we start showing,
how much do you tip Steve Wozniak?
Emma.
Do you think Emma knows who Steve Wozniak is?
Like the How I Met Your Mother finale all over again.
Well, I didn't see that, but I heard a lot of talk about.
Emma.
I think Emma knows who Wozniak is.
I'm making a delivery from the Apple Store. I just do this now and then. And this is a computer for someone here. This is
a girl's
name, Emma.
Emma?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
She's a little taken aback. All her friends are gathering. I guess she knows who Woz is. That's pretty cool.
It's some kind of, what is it? I don't know, a graduation gift? I don't know. Hi. Welcome.
She's speechless. Okay, Woz, if you want to deliver a Mac to my door, you can. I will. I wonder if he comes with that.
Dancing with the Stars?
What? Yes, I've been on.
Oh, that's how she knows him.
Oh, right.
He was on Dancing with the Stars. In fact, that was. Okay, now we know how she knows who Woz is. You're on Dancing with the Stars. I know you.
Right.
That's kind of sad.
You're almost as big as a Kardashian.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back. Really, it is. Do you remember him doing the fish on Dancing with the Stars or the worm or whatever that is where you go on the floor and you... All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with your picks of the week in just a second on Mac Break Weekly. No April Fool's picks, right?
Nope.
All right. All real stuff you can buy in stores. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the best place to create your new website. The better web starts with your website. Squarespace is two things that you want. It's web hosting, the best hosting ever. We try all the time to bring down Squarespace sites, and we cannot. And we're very good at bringing sites to their knees, to crumbling sites. In fact, what we now do when we go to a site, and I mention a site on one of the shows, and it just crashes hard, TVFool.com, good example. Every time I'm recommended on the radio show, bam. What I do now is I send him an email saying, you know, you should be on Squarespace. You wouldn't have this problem. But that's one. But the other thing you get is also this great software on top of it, which is always kept up to date, always kept secure, and you always get new features all the time. like new templates, 25 wonderful templates at squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button and you could see the different templates you could choose from. These are designed by the best designers working on the web today using the best technology. So they're all, for instance, mobile responsive. That means let's click on one. This is the peak style. And they show you, by the way, some examples, actual sites using peak.
And trying to figure out how you're going to get your website to work on everything at one time is...
No, but they
trivial.
Do it for you.
I know. So the whole thing is they'll do it. They just
no matter out. What, this will work. All sites at squarespace.com will work on any size screen from, you know, an iPhone, a 4-inch screen, all the way up to, an iMac, a 27-inch screen. And they look great. They also all have e-commerce built in. And even if you go with the $8 a month plan, which is their lowest cost plan, actually a very affordable plan, you get e-commerce. So if you're a school with a fundraiser or you have want to do a cash wedding registry or... you're a nonprofit, you could take donations on any Squarespace site because e-commerce is integrated. It's all part of Squarespace. Now, if you want to sell, if you want to have a real store for $24 a month, unlimited products, physical, digital, or service, real-time shipping built into the website, label printing via ShipStation, you get integrated accounting is built in, inventory management. There's an incredible developer platform if you are a CSS whiz. But you don't have to be. You can do everything with point and click. Squarespace does it so you don't have to become a web expert. You just do what you do. And with any annual plan, you get the custom domain name absolutely free. Visit squarespace.com. You don't need a credit card. You don't need an offer code to try it for 2 weeks absolutely free. If you decide to buy, I do ask that you use our offer code MacBreak because, they'll know that you heard about it on MacBreak, which is good for us. And you will get 10% off, which is good for you. A better web starts with your website and squarespace.com. Please use the offer code MacBreak when you decide to buy. Time for our picks of the week. Renee Ritchie, what do you got for us?
I got something. It wasn't officially at Macworld, but I did find Brian Holmes from Pat and Quill wandering the floor. And he had just announced this brand new, I believe it's called the Traveler case.
Ooh.
For the iPhone 5 and 5S. So Pat and Quill does a lot of. They originally did all those sort of moleskin covers.
Yeah, I bought one because of you, and I gave a couple for Christmas too because of you. I love mine.
And now they've been working with leather workers, artisanal leather workers in Mexico, and they've done this hand stitched sort
pretty.
Of. If Indiana Jones had an iPhone case, this is what it is. It's got parachute style stitching. It is handcrafted leather. It's got room for a couple cards in the bottom. It's got this handy tab you can use to pull them up, so you can easily access them. And pull them out. When you push them back down, it lets the camera shine through. It's got a 3M adhesive, and I'm being phone called.
Don't answer it.
I won't.
It's Pat and Quill calling.
Probably saying, "Why are you?" No, it's available now on the store.
Website
just launched.
Shut down.
Actually, on sale. I can easily press the button to send the call to voicemail, which I'll do. And it's just a very nice case. They wanted something that was easier to use. Some people didn't like the fact that you had to open it, turn it around, put the strap over it to use it when you wanted to use it as a phone. So this one is faceless, but it's still got that sort of old. I just love the idea
old
world products swathing the newest, latest technology. So you have aluminum and glass on the phone, but then you have this leather and stitching on the back.
That's a skeuomorphism I could live with. Look at
it's
that.
The right kind of skewer.
Yeah. Beautiful. How much is that?
It's on sale today. I don't have the price in front of me.
$70, $69.99. It's padandquill.com. Normally $80 they're offering a deal, but it is a pre-order, so shipping varies.
Yeah. And again, if Indiana Jones had a case, this would be it. So
oh,
if you
I
like
love
that look.
That. Yeah, that really looks beautiful. I like leather.
Yeah, me too.
Tell them to make one for the
it's humanizing.
I shouldn't say that out loud. HTC One. What's neat is he talks about his dad, who was a World War II vet who carried a leather coin pouch. They show it in the video. And how it was the inspiration for this, which I think is really neat. He does great stuff. Patandquill.com.
Yeah.
And they have black or tan. I love how that wears.
Yeah,
it does. It looks great. I have one of the bags that they made earlier, and it wears beautifully. He and his wife, Carrie, are very specific about the people that they find to make their products. And so far, they've lasted really long, and they've worn really well.
Yeah. Gosh, well, maybe I'll get a bag.
You know, this is a very expensive pick for... I'm going to be buying a lot of stuff.
Alex Lindsay. Oh, I see. In the sense that you're going to buy it, because you are not. You're not known for the inexpensive pick.
No. I don't have an inexpensive pick.
Yeah, okay.
Take that, Alex.
It's only half an Alex. Alex, what are you talking about?
I know exactly.
It's nothing. So you're right. It's going to be expensive for you.
It's going to be expensive for me because I'm gonna be like, oh, I need one of those. I need one of those.
These are beautiful. Yeah. What do you got for us?
So my pick, a little untraditional on a show like this.
Yes.
Is actually, I'm picking the HTC One.
Oh, you are a bad, bad man.
So here's the deal. I'm picking this for a specific reason because I want to talk about something. The phone on, the camera on this, it's not that it's a higher resolution
or
anything else.
No, it's only 4 megapixels.
It is the most revolutionary phone that's been put on so I got this a little before it was released and got to play with it a little bit. And then I had to go to Africa without it. And then I realized how much I was missing it. And so I went out and bought it. So I paid for it myself. I didn't. You know,
yeah, I bought one too. I'm on Verizon, and I love this thing.
So the thing is that this is the most revolutionary phone. Most revolutionary camera on a phone of the things that you can do with it, the things that you can add to it, and the thing is you want it on it. This is to me what I'm really buying is a camera that uploads to G+.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's,
you know,
computational photography. It's the future of photography, I believe.
And it's, you know, this is, and the reason I'm bringing it up on MacBreak. Is specifically because this is not the number one thing people use their phone for is taking pictures.
And I think it's why iPhone sells so well, because it is the best camera on a phone.
But I think Apple's gonna, this phone is the Apple needs to step up and you know, think about dual lenses. About, there's been lots of rumors that they're looking at that already. But think about the stuff that is, because this leaves anyone who's been using I have a little Lytro.
This kind of does box. A Lytro light. So it only has two focal points. In fact, I can show you.
But this one, you can find a lot of. All I got to say is I took the Lytro to Africa instead of this because I had to leave it behind. And at the time, I couldn't take it out of the country. And the Lytro, it was really a bummer. You know, because there's so. And the thing is you're going to want to take pictures, and not all the photos
people
are going to work.
This is an April Fool's joke.
No, it's not an April Fool's joke at all. You know, so I know it's a wrong day. I was trying to think of a really good April Fool's joke, but I bought one, so that would be really expensive.
Well, you're a camera April buff. I think that carries some weight if you say that.
Well, I'm taking pictures of my family and my kids, and what I will say is that they're not all going to work, but this makes photography fun, because what happens is you end up taking photos, you take a lot of the photos, and then you sit there and you're playing with them all the time on your phone. You're not playing with them on your computer. You're not like, oh, when I upload them, I'll go work on them. You're sitting around in a line somewhere, you know, noodling around with your photos. It's awesome. So anyway,
here's
and
a picture just to give. I'm doing a full review on it this afternoon before you buy. But here's a picture I just took at the beginning of the show of Alex, and I have to say the detail is quite good. I mean, if you look at the grill. And this is it's 4 megapixels, but it's 2 micron.
Ultra-pixels.
They're high quality. And then you can do things like this in the camera. I didn't even know I could do this. Alex showed me. I can give him alien eyes. I've been very happy. I've been playing with this quite a bit. The low light performance is quite good because it is 2 micron pixels. One thing that you can do that's different on this is you can now they have manual settings for exposure, for f-stop, but you can also say this is the max ISO that I want you to go. This is ISO 800. I'm going to even turn it down a little bit, I think. Actually, no, this is 2000, and you can see it's quite grainy because it's quite dark. But it's got a, you know what? It's stealing the flash that Apple did, the two-color flash, to do white balance in the flash. I think I'm not sure I'd say it's as good as the iPhone 5S. That still is the gold standard, but
I just feel like there's a lot of shots, and if you go up to my G+ page, you'll see a couple of them that I posted last week.
Have you posted some?
And there's a lot of shots that I just find, as a snapshot, it's whatever it is, but being able to have the nice short depth of field, be able to post it to your blog, be able to post it to whatever.
Well, here's an example. Here's a Chad picture that I then, I just tap one click, 3 seconds, it defocuses the background. You could do it the other way around, defocus Chad, but I really didn't think that was a good idea. And it gives it a kind of a nice professional look. They do have stupid stuff like stickers. But because it knows the background, it can also do stuff to the background. This is all in camera, which is kind of interesting. In phone, I should say.
But it's the only one. Now, I'm not saying I always have another Android. I always have an Android phone of some sort that I'm testing and working on as well as my iPhone. But this is the first one that I could see myself actually. It may become a majority usage. You know, I mean, I'm pretty attached to my iPhone.
You know what it's good for? Because it's 4 megapixels, maybe you're not going to make a poster on the wall for this. But for what mostly we do, which is post to social networks.
Posting to G+ or Facebook or whatever, this is a
lot of fun.
It really just adds a whole lot of fun to it. I don't know about that. So all the little 3D moves, whatever. It is going to be the bane of existence for my for everyone that works at the Pixel Corp, because there's a little thing where you can take pictures and annotate it. You can draw on it.
Yeah,
there's gonna be a whole lot of like this shouldn't be here.
But that's this. Useful,
you know.
Right?
And you walk around, but
so here's John Slonina foreground and, I mean, and background in focus.
I mean, it's a snapshot, and then it's a really fun photo, and it gives me the look that I'm oftentimes looking for, but I don't want to carry around an SLR, and I can immediately upload it.
Right.
You know,
and you can add David Hasselhoff. And,
well, there's that. They really should have a David Hasselhoff filter. That would be, you could place him and move him around.
I've been happy with the pictures. I wasn't so happy with last year's HTC One. I thought the pictures were not great. This is the same sensor. They've done some bad things. They've taken out optical image stabilization.
Yeah.
But I think that they have improved I call it pleasingness.
Mm-hmm.
So there, I've added some text to the image. I think the pleasingness of the photo, which is something that I mean, now use when I'm reviewing camera phones as opposed to, you know, pure technical specs.
Well, and I think that, again, this is the issue is I just bring it up because I really think that I'm really hoping that we see something from Apple that is competitive.
I bet they will. That
they're going to do something, not only have a great sensor, but ability to do this.
This is the future of photography.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nokia's done it with the Lumia, too. I mean, I think that it's pretty clear that that's where things are going.
Yep.
It's interesting, not to horn on Alex's pick, but Nokia is doing a lot of amazing things with the glass. Apple's doing amazing things with the image signal processor. HTC and Samsung are doing great things with the software, and Google's doing fantastic things with AutoAwesome on the server. And if we could just get everybody to start doing more amazing things in all four of those areas,
right. We'll
have some really good mobile cameras.
Right. And people point out, oh, I could do that in Photoshop. Yeah, you can. Of course you can. It's not doing... And there are
apps...
It's
the fact that I'm standing in an airport in Ethiopia and able to upload it. That's what I...
Yeah, well,
that's what's important to me.
The most cool thing is that when the argument against phone cameras has always been, well, there are always limits to how this tiny, tiny little lens and this tiny, tiny little image sensor, the things you physically can't do with it. And now all these makers are saying, yeah, it would be nice if we had a nice big lens, if we had a nice big image sensor. But now, because we have so much processing power, we can fake pretty much any optical feature that you've got in this big honking camera, including automatically smoothing background noise at high ISOs. The iPhone, one of the reasons why it does such a great job is that it just has so much time with the speed of that processor to take several pictures and then figure out which one is the one they should actually show people. They're like the chef that makes a tray of cookies and only picks out the three that are perfect to actually put into the box to ship to people. And everyone thinks, oh, wow, it takes such great pictures. No, it takes some crappy pictures, which it never, ever shows you because it learned from that and took a much better picture a fraction of a second later.
That is one feature in this phone that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you've used it. It has 12 frames per second.
Mm-hmm. You mean the
shot, and then it bursts up to 99 shots, and then there's a button comes up says you want to take the best of those.
Right.
I haven't tried it, but that's an interesting thought.
When you take the photo, the Zoe style, the issue is you don't get the shortened up the field anymore because it's you know doing different processing.
There's a lot of things. So
for me, I'm really attached to the. I'm afraid I took a picture of my daughter, you know, walking through it, and I was like, I like the photo so much. That's exactly what. Sold me on.
You made an interesting point, Andy, and I think a lot of this is possible because the processors in these phones have gotten so fast. Anand did a great article on the iPhone's processor, saying it's essentially, the A7 is essentially a desktop-class processor, and very few apps take advantage of it.
Yeah. So which is exactly what Apple was saying when they rolled it out. They're saying this is desktop class computing. And we're not saying that just because it's a 64-bit processor. We're saying that this is a desktop processor.
Yeah. Well worth reading. You know, this is a highly technical article, as Anand often does, but well worth reading if you're interested in what the architecture of the A7 means. And, you know, the takeaways are it is a desk-class processor, and yet a lot of apps just don't yet take advantage of it.
But it means that
Apple can, over time, do things like build in more functionality into the camera.
And I think one of the reasons that a lot of apps don't take advantage of it is that it's very hard to develop something that is that heavy for $3.99.
Yeah.
So I think that part of it is that there's just not the market for the kind of engineering that's required to, you know,
right.
to make that worth the investment. The ROI. Remember
how long it used to take to save an HDR image on an iPhone, and now it's so fast they just put it on auto.
Isn't that amazing? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy, your pick of the week.
It is April Fool's Day, so this isn't a trick, but I thought I'd pick a movie that was just a documentary that was just released today. It's called Stripped. And it is a documentary years in the making about comic strips, about the transition from the people who've been doing this for decades, who are watching newspaper markets dry up, including also the people who started doing comic strips on web comics and are now doing some of the most innovative and one of the most popular work that's out there. I mean, you look at the list of people who have been interviewed for this. Bill Watterson was interviewed in depth for this thing. Wow. And he liked this documentary so much when they showed him a cut that he said, Would you be interested in my drawing a poster for you? And then the filmmaker said, yes, we would be interested in Bill Watterson, who never gives interviews, and we've seen one piece of artwork over the past 20 years. We would be interested in that. And so it really is a who's who. Where
Matt Inman, Oatmeal's on it. Oh, this is great. Yeah,
they've got Charles Schulz's widow. They've got Danielle Corsetto, one of my favorites. They've got Carl Kershaw, one of my favorites. This basically is a list of almost all of the comic strips in print and online that I read every single morning. So and just got released today.
They're trying to get to number one on iTunes, so everybody should buy it.
Yes.
Today.
I have bought it. I have not that is my reward at the end of the day today to get to watch it. But I've spoken to people who've already seen it, and they're like, oh, this is long time coming and exactly what this industry needed.
All right. $15 to buy in high def, $4.99 to rent. I'm going to buy it because let's make them number one. What do you say?
Buy it and gift it.
Well, let's not go crazy. Is that a request? Would you like a copy?
No, I bought it and I gifted it.
Oh, you already did. Good for you. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. I'm buying it right now as we speak. It looks really good. And I'm a huge fan of Bill Watterson. So.
Again, they spent years flying out to pretty much everybody that had something to say. And so this is it's almost like sometimes you see these documentaries where it's like, thank God that they got to people and got these interviews before they get too old and they die or before they move on to other things. I think this is going to be something that we refer to back for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Just bought it.
Yes.
And now I shall watch it. Today, Goat Simulator comes out. That's my pick of the week. Everybody should go out, buy Goat Simulator. Perhaps you saw the trailer. I thought, frankly, that it was an April Fool's joke. I didn't believe it was real. But in fact, apparently you can buy it on Steam and play. Have we purchased yet? I thought we should play this on...
On
Twit
fun.
Live at some point.
You get points for licking things and points for smashing things. And
you bought it!
And it's a lot of fun.
It's only $10.
Yeah. You can get a jetpack and go into an anti-gravity room.
Like a goat in a jetpack. I think that's a it's an idea whose time has come.
Yeah. It's an interesting... It's funny. The game developers, I think there's a poster that was like, you get to be a goat. Lots of bugs. Seriously, we're not going to fix anything that's not game-breaking.
And, full of bugs.
Yeah. And you get to be a goat.
People love glitches in a game. You know, people who played Gary's Mod will love this. It's basically kind of Gary's Mod with goats.
Right.
Actually, for all I know, Gary's Mod has goats.
It most likely actually is built on Gary's Mod. Who knows?
Yeah. It kind of feels like that, doesn't it?
Could easily.
Yeah. My pick of the week, goat-simulator.com. You have to have Steam. I don't know if it works on the Mac. I didn't even check. I probably should. Steam on the Mac actually is well worth getting. If you don't have it, it really turns the Mac into a great gaming platform. Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded our broadcast day. The April Fool's joke is over. You may now go about your work. Thank you, Andy Iannocco, for joining us at the Chicago Sun-Times and Iannocco.com. Always a pleasure to see you. Are you going to post some of those John Singer Sargent pictures on your Flickr?
Yes, it's one of my test pictures, and you will not believe the crazy amount of detail he put into this.
But it's
huge, and now I've kind of got an ongoing project of I got to spend some more time in that gallery and learning more about this sort of stuff. It's good heavens. People keep asking me, I'm in Boston for a couple of days, what should I see? And they're surprised when I say, go to the public library. And they're never confused after they visit. Said, "Oh my God, I spent 3 hours there and $0 of my money, and it was the best time I ever had."
It's kind of hard to believe that. I mean, I'm looking at the ceiling and the.
It was the late 1890s, and it really is a who's who of whoever was an important artist or sculptor at that time got a commission. I just found out last week that that Whistler was supposed to do a huge mural for the big study room. That's why there's a big empty spot. For was supposed to be Columbus discovering America, and so you see the sketch, and that's everybody else that was of any notability. Even the doors, the front doors for this, were done by Daniel Chester French, the guy who did the Lincoln Memorial. Because if you were a hotshot muralist or sculptor, you got a commission to do something for the Boston Public Library.
And if you go to flickr.com/AndyI, there's also squirrels.
Yes,
squirrels.
Hey, by the way, as we wrap things up, I think we should go back to our international friendship satellite feed because an engineer just ran by. Quick, get the astronaut.
Spin up the satellite dish.
I want to thank Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Always a pleasure, Renee. Thank you for being here. Thanks to Alex Lindsay from pixelcore.com. Thank you for joining us. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific Tuesdays. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Now, back to the satellite. Break time is over. Thank you, everybody.